The trend lines on human rights continue to move in the wrong direction. We see evidence that in every region of the world,
Myanmar and Hong Kong grapple with basic rights. It's Friday, April 2nd. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're online. Find us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, picking up the vaccination pace, navigating rising sea levels, journalists on trial, debating political debate, Asian stereotypes on film. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Anti-coup protesters in Myanmar symbolically burned copies of the country's constitution as a group of deposed lawmakers announced a new civilian government to run counter to the ruling military junta. The rebel government, dubbed the CRPH, is made up of members of deposed de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi's National League for Democracy, who were elected in November but not allowed to take their seats after the military detained Suu Kyi and replaced the civilian government on February 1st. The CRPH also announced a new federal constitution to replace the one drafted by the military in 2008, which brought democracy to Myanmar after five decades while still maintaining the army's power and influence in any civilian government. The CRPH-drafted constitution was written to meet the long-standing demands of Myanmar's regional ethnic groups, who have been fighting for decades for greater autonomy. Here in the United States, the State Department has released its annual Country Report on Human Rights. The report examines how nations treat their citizens from the voting booth to the workplace. VOA's Arash Arabasadi reports, Amy Katz narrates.
Too many people continue to suffer under brutal human rights conditions in 2020. This, according to the State Department's annual Country Report that examines how governments treat their people. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken presented the report, opening with a grim outlook.
The report we're releasing today shows that the trend lines on human rights continue to move in the wrong direction. We see evidence that in every region of the world, this is happening.
Blinken called the Chinese government's treatment of its minority religious and ethnic groups genocide. The report lists violence against and imprisonment of critics and journalists in places like Russia and Belarus. Washington Director at Human Rights Watch, Sarah Holowinski, says the report highlights an administrative shift in foreign policy.
When you look up sort of definition of human rights abuses, Iran is right up there. And I think this administration in particular has an interest in calling out what those abuses are.
Blinken also mentioned the violence in Myanmar following a military coup there after Aung San Suu Kyi's National League for Democracy Party won a landslide election in November. Holowinski says accountability in this report gives dignity to victims.
The more that states are using these kinds of human rights reports to make their policies, that means that human rights is at the table.
Holowinski says that approach to policymaking could influence one country's decision to send weapons of war to another. For Arash Arabasadi in Washington, Amy Katz, VOA News.
In Hong Kong, seven prominent pro-democracy activists were found guilty of organizing and participating in an unlawful assembly during the 2019 anti-government demonstrations. The activists include media tycoon Jimmy Lai, the founder of the pro-democracy newspaper Apple Day, and 82-year-old barrister Martin Lee, one of the founders of the opposition Democratic Party. Two other defendants had already pleaded guilty. The seven face up to 5 years in prison. The seven were arrested last year for taking part in a protest on August 18, 2019, that drew more than 1 million people, one of the largest that engulfed Hong Kong that year, and involved violent clashes between protesters and police. You can find more on all of these stories by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia, as well as on Facebook, and stop by our website, voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Seven Hong Kong democracy activists convicted over 2019 protest. United Nations steps up relief effort for Rohingya fire survivors. New civilian government formed in Myanmar to counter military regime. More than 70 journalists harassed in Cambodia in 2020, according to a new report. Afghan women pornography artists challenge male counterparts in the arts industry. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and so much more when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia and voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. In Australia, there are concerns the nation's mass vaccination rollout is moving too slowly. The government has missed its ambitious inoculation target set for the end of March, but officials have insisted the pace of the plan will increase following a snap 3-day lockdown in the Queensland state capital, Brisbane. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The government had hoped to have administered 4 million COVID-19 vaccinations in Australia by the end of March. But official figures indicate the program is way behind schedule. It's estimated that only 600,000 doses have been given so far. There have been problems with the supply of drugs from overseas, but some doctors have complained that the inoculation program has been poorly managed. Of most concern is the slow rollout of injections for frontline health and other essential workers, including those at quarantine hotels for returned travellers. Epidemiologists have said the clusters of recently discovered coronavirus infections in Brisbane have shown the vaccination process has been too slow. Some of those cases are linked to hospital staff. But the government has insisted the rollout was gathering pace and that thousands more clinics would begin vaccinating many more Australians in the coming weeks. Trade Minister Dan Tehan says Australian states and territories also need to do more. In Queensland, the state government has rejected the accusation it has stockpiled vaccines. Officials have insisted it was an attempt by the federal government to try to hide its own failings. As the political squabbles continue, so does Brisbane's 3-day COVID-19 lockdown because of two small, distinct clusters of infections. Two new locally acquired cases were reported Wednesday, and more than 33,000 coronavirus tests were completed in the past 24 hours. Queensland Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk is urging the community to be screened if they feel unwell. Australia has joined 13 other countries, including the United States and Japan, in expressing concerns that the World Health Organization report on the origins of coronavirus was delayed and lacked access to complete information. A WHO-led team spent 4 weeks in and around the Chinese city of Wuhan, where the virus was first detected earlier this year. It said the virus had probably been transmitted from bats to humans through another animal, and that a leak from a scientific laboratory was extremely unlikely. Australia has expressed concern that investigators lacked access to complete original data and samples. Australia has recorded just under 29,300 COVID-19 infections since the pandemic began. 909 people have died, according to the health department. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, ousted leader Aung San Suu Kyi and detained President Win Myint appeared in good health during a court hearing. But it was not clear if they were aware of the current situation in the country, according to their lawyer. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. You've made it with us to the end of the week. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Extreme weather and slowly rising sea levels are affecting many parts of the world, especially in Asia. It is a part of the modern reality of climate change. In the United States, Captain Dan Kipnis, whose family has been in South Florida for three generations, is living with this new normal. Elena Wolf has his story, narrated by Anna Rice.
It was over 30 years ago when Dan Kipnis started noticing the sea he grew up on was changing fast.
I'm on the water all the time, okay? I'm a boat captain, okay? So I watch barnacles grow up, pilings and seawalls. Well, a barnacle has to have water, and if it keeps going higher and higher and higher up a seawall or up a piling, it won't get higher unless the water's going up. And when I first noticed this around 1987, I said, something's wrong.
And that something was that the water was rising.
What I saw in Miami Beach over time is that the streets started to flood. Water was coming back up the storm drains instead of going out.
It happened to him, too. His home on the beach was slowly reclaimed by the ocean. After years of flooding, he gave up and gave in. He decided to spend his last years in peace. He got a house near a small pond, 2 hours' drive from Miami, 7 meters above the sea level. Kipnis joined more than 1 million people that the Urban Institute estimates have been forced from their homes by extreme weather and climate change in the U.S. They're called climate refugees, and the numbers worldwide are in the millions and growing, according to the Urban Institute. Kipnis was one of the lucky ones. He was able to move, but he says you can't move a city.
I saw them ripping all of Miami Beach apart to put in new storm drains, pumping stations to get the water off the land and pump it back into Biscayne Bay, raising roads, knowing that houses were going to have to be raised.
When Kipnis was younger, his relationship with the ocean was a lot more consumptive. Record takes, pictures with trophies.
I was nasty. I never met a fish I didn't want to kill.
But for over 2 decades, Kipnis has been trying to educate people about the impending climate change through lectures, then art.
This is the first painting that I did, all right, ever. It's an oil painting. And it's called Changing Places, so I'm blue like the fish should be, and the fish is tan like, well, pink like me. And it's a real fish. It really was this big.
These days, he's just watching the sea get closer, and he says it's winning.
I'm 70. If I live 10 more years, it'll be terrific. I'm going to live happily. Am I disappointed? You betcha. Am I angry? You betcha I'm angry. Because we could have stopped this a long time ago. Do we have enough time left? I pray we do. I kind of doubt it, though.
For Elena Wolf in Florida, Anna Rice, VOA News.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. Pakistan has removed a nearly 2-year-old ban on the import of cotton and sugar from India amid a gradual thawing of relations between the two nuclear-armed rival neighbors. Islamabad is hoping to keep soaring domestic prices under control. You'll find all the big stories on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, we hear many stories about journalists on trial in Asia and around the world, but it's also happening here in the United States. A journalist in Iowa is on trial on charges stemming from her coverage of a Black Lives Matter protest last year. VOA's Jusessamine Oni reports the case has intensified widespread concerns over press freedom in the United States.
Protests across the United States erupted following the death of George Floyd, a black man, while in police custody. Last year was a time of social upheaval across America, and press freedom advocates say journalists faced unprecedented rates of assaults and arrests.
Police deliberately took me.
Andra Suhuri, a reporter for a newspaper in the state of Iowa, says she was pepper sprayed and arrested while covering a demonstration.
I didn't think it was a good idea to run from officers. I wasn't doing anything wrong. So I put up my hands. I said, I'm pressed.
Floyd's
death in Minneapolis sparked weeks of unrest. Journalists who were covering it sometimes became the story themselves.
They continued broadcasting live despite being assaulted by American police.
According to the U.S. Press Freedom Tracker, nearly 130 journalists were arrested or detained in 2020.
That's a more than 1,200% increase from the year before. That's more than our entire history combined. We were launched in 2017. So there were so many journalists arrested and detained in the course of reporting that it was already just an unprecedented and unusual year for press freedom violations, an entirely egregious year for press freedom violations. Why they're taking this one to trial, I don't think anybody has been able to understand fully.
In most cases nationwide, charges against reporters were dropped. Prosecutors in Iowa argue that Sahuri and her then-boyfriend, Spencer Robnett, resisted police orders to disperse.
I grabbed her left arm because she was still present and hadn't dispersed from the area. And then she kind of pulled away. That's when Mr. Robnett approached and grabbed her right arm and tried to remove her from my custody.
International rights group Amnesty International sees her case as a test for press freedom in America.
It is very concerning that anybody would take a journalist who was covering a protest as a working journalist to trial. This is a human rights violation, and it is also a violation of the rights in which the United States prides itself around the First Amendment.
For this charge,
the jury found Sahuri not guilty, but press freedom advocates say the case could set a precedent for U.S. journalists detained while reporting. Jason Samuelny, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia, the Philippine government says more than 250 Chinese vessels it believes are operated by militia have been spotted near six Manila-claimed islands and reefs in the disputed South China Sea and demanded China immediately remove them. China has ignored a Philippine government diplomatic protest. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the U.S. government has many unique facets that set it apart from most governments in the world. The Senate has rules preventing legislation from moving forward for a vote without having 60 senators to agree to end debate and then proceed to that vote. The rule is now in the political crosshairs amid a Senate evenly divided between the two political parties and major legislation in the pipeline. VOA's Steve Reddish explains the filibuster and its future.
There are reasons why some call the United States Senate the world's most deliberative body. One of them is the filibuster.
In the Senate of the United States, legislation can't pass with just a simple majority.
They have what we call a supermajority cloture rule.
The higher threshold to proceed to a Senate vote was established so the minority party can help influence and craft legislation. The filibuster has been around in some form since the mid-1800s when senators used it to protect slavery. In the 1950s and 60s, it was used to stall civil rights legislation.
We definitely plan to have a march on Washington if there is a filibuster.
When people who supported segregation would filibuster civil rights and voting rights bills, they would have to sleep on cots outside the Senate floor because there could be a vote at any time.
That was when the minority had to carry out what is called a talking filibuster.
Okay, if you care so much about this bill, hold the floor, offer debate, offer proposals, offer amendments, do obstructive motions, what have you. Put your money where your mouth is. Really, really show up.
The Senate changed the filibuster rules in 1975 to eliminate the need to keep talking. Instead, three-fifths, 60 of the current 100 senators have to agree to end debate on an issue in order to hold a vote. Having served in the Senate for 36 years, Joe Biden has supported keeping the filibuster. In an exclusive interview with ABC News' George Stephanopoulos, now President Biden admits moving his agenda forward may mean modifying how the Senate operates.
The filibuster, you had to stand up and command the floor.
and you had to keep talking alone. You couldn't call for, you know, no one could say, you know, quorum call. Once you stopped talking, you lost that, and someone could move in and say, I moved the question of. So you got to work for the filibuster.
Biden's suggestion conjures images from the 1939 classic film Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, when a senator filibusters by talking the issue nonstop.
No, sir, I will not yield.
Changing or eliminating the filibuster requires just a simple majority vote. While Democrats have the slimmest of majorities, not all are on board.
The 60-vote rule was there for a purpose. Our founding fathers said we should come together. We should cool down, come together.
Joe Manchin, the most conservative of the 50 Senate Democrats, has said he would never eliminate the filibuster. But he agreed with Biden about reviving the talking filibuster to, in his words, make it a little bit more painful. Filibuster rules were altered twice in the last decade to make it easier to confirm presidential nominees. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell says Democrats will rue further changes.
As soon as Republicans wound up back in the saddle, we wouldn't just erase every liberal change that hurt the country. We'd strengthen America with all kinds of conservative policies with zero input from the other side.
Biden-backed legislation on immigration reform and voting rights will soon test whether today's filibuster survives. Steve Reddish, VOA News, Washington.
Boogie, a recent film by Chinese-American filmmaker Eddie Huang, addresses stereotypes Asian people face in the United States. Lead actor Taylor Takahashi spoke with VOA's Penelope Palou about his film character and Asian representation in the film.
No one believes in an Asian basketball player. Have mercy on my soul. It's a joke in this country. We can cook, clean, count real good, but anything else, we pick last.
Boogie, a Chinese-American high school student and a talented basketball player, dreams of joining the NBA, a spot in the U.S. professional league. Despite his impressive performance, he's rejected by college scouts while his family faces bankruptcy. Japanese-American actor Taylor Takahashi told VOA that, like his character, he excelled at basketball in high school.
I kind of went to basketball because it was the sport that people would raise their eyebrows at. As a 5'8", 5'9", you know, Asian kid, it's one of those things that, like, you're not supposed to be good at this.
And that's the film's message, defying Asian-American stereotypes, says Takahashi.
We do very similar things as everyone else does in this country, and we want to be seen in that light. We want to normalize it and not just be, you know, tagged in this box of kung fu master or nerd or scientist or doctor, and get, you know, kind of, you know, trapped in that stereotypical box.
Takahashi says that since the film's release, he has been approached by Asian viewers, thanking him for showing a more nuanced depiction of their experience in America. But he adds, the film also expresses the immigrant experience at large.
It's not just an Asian, you know, story. We're Asian vehicle and basketball is the vessel, but everyone can relate to this.
Takahashi adds that American communities need to become more vocal against the rising anti-Asian violence during the pandemic.
We never expected to have freedom or independence or equality, any of these things you ABCs expect to have in this country.
Boogie director Eddie Huang has grounded Boogie on his personal experiences of facing prejudice.
I've faced abuse and violence my entire life for being Asian. You know, like when I was 5, a kid pushed me off the slide and broke my arm. But right now, it seems to be really peaking for our community, and it's a real problem.
Wang says the basketball drama explores themes of family dynamics, identity, and perceptions of being other in America.
And I would just encourage everyone in their communities to educate each other, educate your family and friends, and just remind them that we're all human.
So what are you going to do?
He hopes his film serves as a reminder of that. Penelope Palou, VOA News, Washington.
That's our program for today. Thanks for joining us on VOA Asia. You may continue online on any of our various platforms. Look us up under our name, VOA Asia, on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. We also thank those who help bring the program to you, our managing editor Diane Gao and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.